Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, lacking a common question of law or fact edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 20th, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Walmart v. Dukes, a class action lawsuit brought by current and former Walmart employees. The respondents alleged that nearly 1.5 million women were discriminated against on the basis of sex during their time of employment at thousands of Walmart stores across the country. The main question before the court was whether questions of law or fact common to the class existed, which is a requirement of Rule 23A of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. In an opinion delivered by Justice Scalia, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that the plaintiff class did not meet the commonality requirement of Rule 23A and therefore could not be certified as a class. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Thomas, and Alito joined Justice Scalia's opinion. Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined Parts 1 and 3 of Justice Scalia's opinion. Justice Ginsburg also filed an opinion concurring in part and dissenting in part, which Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined. To discuss the case, we have Brian T. Fitzpatrick, who is an associate professor at Vanderbilt University Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Fitzpatrick.
On June 20th, the Supreme Court decided the case of Walmart v. Dukes. The Dukes case was thought to be the largest employment discrimination class action lawsuit ever filed. The class of plaintiffs included 1.5 million current and former female employees of Walmart. The class alleged that Walmart discriminated against them because they are women in promotion and pay at thousands of stores all across America. The class sought declaratory and injunctive relief as well as back pay for class members and punitive damages. The potential damages in the case were estimated at well over $1 billion. The issue before the Supreme Court was whether this case should have been certified as a class action at all. The United States District Court for the Northern District of California certified the class under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 23B2, which is the provision used for injunctive and declaratory class actions, and a sharply divided en banc panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit affirmed. Walmart appealed the class certification decision to the Supreme Court, and when the Supreme Court granted certiorari last year, most observers believed the court would reverse the Ninth Circuit and decertify the class. The observers were correct. On June 20th, the court reversed the Ninth Circuit by a vote of 5-4 on one question and by a unanimous vote on another. The two questions before the Supreme Court were as follows. First, the court was asked whether the lower courts correctly concluded that the class satisfied the prerequisites for certification under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 23A, in particular the commonality prerequisite, which requires all the members of the class to share a question of fact or law in common. Second, the court was asked whether the lower courts were correct to consider the class under Rule 23B2, the rule for mandatory non-opt-out classes seeking injunctive or declaratory relief, rather than Rule 23B3, the rule for opt-out classes seeking money damages. The class in this case was seeking both injunctive and declaratory relief as well as money damages, and lower courts have long been divided on which of the Rule 23B categories is applicable in these so-called mixed cases. In an opinion by Justice Scalia, the court answered both questions in the negative, and the court's answers will have broad implications for other class action cases. On the first question, the court's 5-justice conservative majority decided that the class could not satisfy the commonality requirement. Although, as Justice Ginsburg's dissent pointed out, the commonality requirement has never been thought very difficult to meet, the court held that this case could not do it, and the reason the court gave will have major implications for all sorts of class action cases. The class presented 2 common allegations about the cause of the gender discrimination it sought to remedy. First, the class had alleged that Walmart's policy of delegating hiring and promotion decisions to the discretion of individual managers caused gender bias. The court thought this allegation did not raise a common question because there was no allegation that the managers exercised their discretion in the same way. If different managers exercised discretion in different ways, then Walmart's policy of discretion presented separate issues, not a common one, the court held. Second, and more significantly, the class had alleged that Walmart's peculiar corporate culture had created gender bias. Although the court thought the allegation about Walmart's corporate culture was common to all the women in the class, the court did not credit the allegation because it thought the allegation was not supported by, quote, significant proof. The court made this finding despite the fact that the class had submitted an expert report to substantiate the allegation about Walmart's corporate culture. Resolving an issue that had long divided lower courts, the court held that it was appropriate for courts to consider the merits of the class's allegations in deciding whether to certify the class. And if the allegations are not supported by this, quote, significant proof, they can be ignored. This holding could be far-reaching in its implications. Class certification decisions are often decided at the very outset of a case, well before discovery is completed. Plaintiffs in the federal system normally do not need to submit proof of their allegations at the time they file their complaint, and there is no assurance they will acquire the proof they need until discovery has been completed. As such, it may be difficult for many plaintiffs to satisfy courts that their common allegations should be credited. This holding by the Supreme Court is consistent with the court's recent holdings in other areas, especially the Twombly and Iqbal cases that raised pleading standards, that seek to shield defendants at the earliest possible moments from having to defend cases that judges think do not have much merit. Although the second question was rendered superfluous by the court's resolution of the first question, the court went on to answer it and decided it unanimously. All nine justices agreed that the lower courts had been incorrect to treat the class as an injunctive and declaratory class action rather than a money damages class. The court held that whenever the monetary relief sought by the class would require individualized awards, it must be treated as a 23B3 money damages class. Because the back pay awards in this case would require individualized determinations, the class therefore could not use the provision for injunctive and declaratory class actions under Rule 23B2. The court's holding on this question will also have broad implications for many other class actions. It is much easier to certify an injunctive or declaratory class action under Rule 23B2 than it is to certify a damages class action under Rule 23B3, because under the latter rule, the class must show that the common issues predominate over the individual issues in the case. For this reason, it is a common tactic in labor and employment class actions, consumer class actions, and civil rights class actions to add claims for declaratory or injunctive relief to claims for money damages in the hope that the court will consider certifying the class under 23B2 rather than 23B3. The court has now more or less closed the door on this tactic because few types of money damages can be awarded without individualized determinations. Thus, it will be much more difficult in the future than it has been in the past to certify many class actions. Although the Walmart case, with its unprecedented size and fragile allegations of gender discrimination, was in many ways unique, the court's opinions decertifying the class can be read to broadly apply to many class actions, and when it is, it will make many class actions more difficult to certify. Not only has the court nearly closed the door on certifying class actions seeking mixed relief under the more lenient provision of 23B2, but the court has now empowered district courts to consider the merits of common allegations when deciding whether to certify any case. As such, I predict the court's decision will be welcomed by corporate defendants and dreaded by plaintiffs' lawyers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.